He is one of America's prominent sports commentators and columnists,
known for his fearless opinions and passionate dialogue.
I know, it's sad, but the best sports conversation has absolutely nothing to do with sports.
He has perfected the Daily Sports Podcast, having produced hundreds of topical, credible shows without even a hint of fake news.
No filters, no mute buttons, no BS, just me and whatever the hell I feel like talking about.
He has done 1,700 TV shows, written 8,000 columns, broadcast hundreds of talk shows, published a book.
He has covered every major sports event nationally and worldwide.
And yet, we still can't shut him up.
The ceiling is the roof.
And now from Los Angeles, inside his studio by the Pacific Ocean,
where he plans on hanging out with a beer immediately after this podcast is recorded.
Oh, man.
Here he is, Jay Mariotti.
The show is unmuted. I'm Jay in Los Angeles, and for all the boo-hooing by Jeff Bezos, who says he was extorted by the National Enquirer as part of some grand Trumpian plot, let me ask this of the Amazon billionaire. How could you be so stupid to enter the online jungle with intimate photos and texts from an extramarital relationship? To me, that's the story here. The world's wealthiest man acting like a dumb, smitten teenager. As owner of the Washington Post, which has turned Trump-hating into an unreadable, almost psychotic obsession, Bezos is getting a taste of his own medicine right now. And by going after National Enquirer Chief Executive David Pecker, all Bezos does is make himself vulnerable to headlines such as this all-timer in the New York Post. Ready? Bezos exposes Pecker.
All you need to know about sports today in 15 minutes, or maybe 18, you know, depending on the Warriors, the Steelers, Trump, and the LeBron James Media Network.
So is Kyler Murray the next great quarterbacking force in the NFL? I think so. And we're about to find out as the Heisman Trophy winner, he of the dazzling dual threat skills, says he's, quote, fully committing my life and time, end quote, to professional football. This ends his baseball career, a blow to a wobbling sport that has more trouble by the day, and it's also a boost to football, a sport that is supposed to be fading away in 21st century culture because of brain trauma evidence. Well, Murray chose football in spite of the health risks, and he did because, face it, he has a better chance of becoming an immediate star in the NFL than perhaps he ever would have with the Oakland A's. He will likely start in his rookie NFL season, perhaps with the Dolphins or the Redskins or maybe another team that trades up for him. And I think Murray is wise to ride the wave of two-way quarterbacks such as Baker Mayfield, his predecessor at Oklahoma, despite Murray's 5'10 stature. Plus, there's money. If he goes 13th to Miami, for instance, Murray will get a $9 million signing bonus and a $15 million rookie contract, whereas the A's were going to give him a $4.4 million bonus. And now he has to return most of that money to the frugal A's, who will probably use it to pay all four of their infielders. I'm kidding. Maybe I'm not kidding. The credibility of the long downtrodden Cleveland Browns improved significantly last season, mostly thanks to Baker Mayfield. But owner Jimmy Haslam and general manager John Dorsey are risking those good public relations vibes by signing Kansas City castoff Kareem Hunt. That's right. He was last seen in a video shoving and kicking a young woman in a hallway at his Cleveland residence. Though this case has different details than the NFL banned Ray Rice, who threw a punch at his significant other in an elevator. While Hunt was not romantically involved with a woman who wouldn't leave his premises when he asked her, this is still a horrible look for a league that continues to face unseemly off-field problems involving notable players. When he was with the Chiefs, Dorsey drafted Hunt, and he speaks highly of Hunt's character. It's not that simple, John. In fact, it's not very bright. Though Hunt was neither arrested nor faced charges for the incident last winter, the NFL has placed him on the commissioner-exempt list and isn't even close to completing an investigation of Hunt. all the Browns have done here is give more ammunition to the social justice screamers out there who fail to look at legal cases individually. In Hunt's case, there was video evidence. To me, it looks cut and dry. I don't know how they're letting him back in the league anytime soon. But in the case of Reuben Foster, who was claimed by the Redskins amid controversy, he was cleared in two domestic violence cases, both involving his off-and-on love interest, who admitted, by the way, to lying the first time, so she has no credibility, according to the authorities, in the second accusation. Yet that didn't stop the screamers from ripping the Redskins, regardless that Foster has cleared due process. The league continuing to look at Foster's case as well. Hunt, at the very least here, he's got to face a six-game suspension just based on the tape. Ezekiel Elliott, though, six games, no tape. I think the tape means everything here. I would ban him for a year. And the Browns, I think, realize they're not going to get him anytime soon, but this is, again, a football man, Dorsey, saying, I'm going to make this move that could help us in 2020 or 2021. I just don't think they needed to do this. He thinks it's worth the backlash. I'm seeing Nick Chubb, a terrific young running back, on their roster. So why take the risk? You know, on some level, the Cleveland Browns are always going to be the Cleveland Browns. And remember when Eric Reed filed a collusion grievance against the NFL, claiming owners were conspiring not to hire him because he was Colin Kaepernick's kneeling partner during the national anthem protests? And remember when Eric Reed said in December that he had been selected seven times for drug testing since signing with Carolina in late September? Well, today, Eric Reed signed a three-year deal worth more than $22 million with the Panthers, who say they are thrilled to have him. So much for the collusion claims, huh, Eric? The baseball owners, so fat and ignorant and oblivious to the endangered status of their sport, have allowed spring training to open this week amid a disgraceful salary shutdown. They've decided, among themselves, to not bid established market value for Bryce Harper, Manny Machado, Adam Jones, and dozens of free agents, in effect colluding to downsize the MLB salary structure. The owners would much prefer to launch their fight with the players' union with a looming labor standoff in only 2 years, rather than prove to the paying customers that they really do want to bid for the best players and really do want to win. As I was explaining to a confused friend the other day, MLB is one big economic pie, plumper and filled with more revenues than ever, more than $10 billion a year. Somebody gets that money, so if you think, oh, come on, the players are making too much money, they're spoiled. The truth is, if they don't get the money, the owners keep the money. And I would prefer the owners spend that money and try to win a World Series. But from blue bloods such as the Dodgers and Yankees on down, owners are sending a message that they are squeezing salaries, even if it means not rewarding an immense talent and massive personality such as Harper. And those who've said they are bidding, such as Chicago White Sox owner and liar for life, Jerry Reinsdorf, they're just yanking the fans' chains. Anybody in Chicago ripping Jerry Reinsdorf? I didn't think so. They're all afraid. Everybody in the media afraid of Jerry. Not me. One team I do believe is sincere about signing Harper is the San Francisco Giants, despite the presence of their algorithmic new baseball boss, Farhan Zaidi, and the longtime face of the Giants, Buster Posey. I loved this. Spoke for many players and fans when he addressed the sport's fractured free agency system. In the middle of this clip, by the way, Posey, you'll hear him catching a falling microphone, proving that he can multitask.
I mean, I think what team out there wouldn't want a Bryce Harper, a Manny Machado, or a lot of free agents out there? I think as players, that's what we, from the time you're 5 years old, you aspire to play against the best competition, whether it's in your little league game or in high school, college, at the big league level. And I think as a fan myself and fans that come to the game or watch them on TV, I want when the Giants are playing X, Y, or Z, fans to say, you know what, those teams are, we're going to get the best. See, hands are good.
Oh, wow.
Hands are good.
Off the field too.
We're going to get the best competition. We know that we're going to get to see a great game tonight. It's not like, well, I don't know. You know, these guys are, they're in rebuilding mode. Like, we've got to figure out a way that each game fans have the feeling that competition as it is at its highest, I think.
Posey also tweeted after the Phillies trade for all-star catcher JT Realmuto, writing, quote, "Great news for Phil's fans, but shouldn't every team be in a win right now mode? What is the point in showing up if you're not trying to win? Thankful for being in an organization that wants to win," end quote, Buster Posey. This was his not-so-subtle way of urging the Giants, who won three World Series earlier this decade before falling on hard times, to get the Harper deal done. Even if signings do start to happen this week, this has been an absolute debacle again for Major League Baseball, the latest reason for everybody to tune out this dying sport. Oh, but the commissioner, Rob Manfred, he says he's interested in, get this, addressing pace of play issues. What? It's February the 11th. You have been talking about this for 3 or 4 years. Spring training is starting. Oh, we're not going to talk about it. Hey, Rob, the average life expectancy in this country is only 78. 78, Rob. And Duke remains the talk of college basketball after its 3-point-fueled win at Virginia. But just as sexual assault scandals have clouded college campuses nationwide, now Mike Krzyzewski's revered program is faced with powerful allegations that come in the wake of accusations against Virginia Lieutenant Governor Justin Fairfax. Meredith Watson, the second woman to accuse Fairfax of sexual assault, said in a statement released by her lawyer that she was raped in 1999 by a Duke basketball player a year before. She said Fairfax assaulted her when both were Duke students. In that era between 1998 and 2001, Duke won a national championship, finished second, and reached an Elite Eight and Sweet 16. Here was Krzyzewski, who says he has no knowledge.
I think there was an allegation made, right? So I'm not sure that it's true or not, that there's an allegation. I didn't find out about it till late last night, and I have no knowledge about it. And I'm playing, obviously, and that is hugely important. And, you know, our university will, you know, take care of whatever actions and give whatever information that's needed to be done. I think our AD has put out a statement that we'll give to you, but it's very, you know, something like that is serious. So our school looks at it that way, and you know, we'll do whatever we can to make sure that we answer whatever questions are posed to us.
The most thoughtful, versatile, and commanding sportscaster of his or perhaps any era, Bob Costas, finally shed some light on his departure from NBC, and this is ugly. Know why Costas was removed from the network Super Bowl coverage last year? His bosses told him he, quote, crossed the line, unquote, when during a roundtable at the University of Maryland, sports journalism roundtable, or what's left of sports journalism, he said this of football safety, quote, "The reality is that this game destroys people's brains," end quote. Rather than acknowledge Costas's words as fact, NBC just swept away the iconic Costas, kowtowing to its filthy, rich relationship with the NFL and making people like me, journalistic purists, reach for the barf bag. This is what's wrong with our industry, why it's dying. Here is how ESPN's E60 program handled the Costas NBC farce.
It all began to fall apart on November 7th, 2017, at a symposium in Maryland.
the reality is that this game destroys people's brains.
Costas's comments went viral, and NBC, whose current contract with the NFL is worth roughly $9 billion, quickly distanced itself from its star. Bob's opinions are his own, and they do not represent those of the NBC Sports Group.
So I guess that NBC is not sure whether there's a connection between football and brain trauma. And I imagine the next press release is, it's still open to question whether or not the earth is round or flat. Okay, I'm good.
Costas has been the purest of sports journalists, fearless and unswayed by corporate politics and attachments to sports leagues. But sports journalism doesn't exist anymore. Why do you think I'm doing this podcast? Thank God. And neither does Costas. He doesn't exist either, although I guess you can find him on the MLB Network until, that is, he pisses off some owner or two, and then they run him off that network. Kids, do not get into this industry. Of course, unless you want to kowtow to leagues and networks and so forth. I don't. What we thought might be the beginning of an NBA Finals rivalry, Warriors versus Celtics, looks kind of bleak right now from the Boston end. The Celtics lost Kyrie Irving to a right knee sprain, then blew a 28-point lead in an atrocious home loss to the depleted Clippers that had the fans booing at TD Garden. Oh, you spoiled mass holes up there. You can't win every championship. Ooh, ooh, boo-hoo. The Celtics have been an internal mess all season with Irving's prima donna act poisoning a team that meshed so well in the playoffs last season without Irving and Gordon Hayward. And now that Irving is dealing with a knee that buckled after reneging on a previous promise to re-sign in Boston, amid the possibility now that Jason Tatum will be headed to New Orleans in a July deal for Anthony Davis, it's no wonder Marcus Morris ripped into his teammates after the Celtics' second straight loss, the previous one after holding an 18-point lead. That left them fifth in the Eastern Conference. Here's Morris.
I mean, for me, it's not really about the loss, it's about the attitudes I'll be playing with. You know, guys are, you know, hanging their heads. It just doesn't, it's not fun, man. Like, it's not fun. We're not competing at a high level. You know, even though we're winning, it's still not, it's just not fun. You know, I don't see the joy in the game. I watch all these other teams on the league, guys up on the bench, they're jumping on the court, they're doing all, you know, other stuff that this look like is they're enjoying, you know, their teammates' success, they're enjoying everything, and they're playing together, and they're playing to win. And when I look at us, I just see a bunch of individuals.
What has to change?
The goal has to be to win. Bottom line, we can't. We got to play to win. That's sacrificing playing hard, that's sacrificing, you know, being a better teammate, that's sacrificing whatever it is, you know, we have to put it to the side. No one's getting traded, the trade deadline's over. We compete for a championship, and that's how we got to approach these games. We're going to lose a draw, man. We're going to lose games, but we don't have no attitude, we don't have no toughness, we ain't having fun, you know. It's going to be a long season.
That surprised you that you're not having fun even when you were winning before this little stretch?
I mean, it hasn't been fun for a long time, man. This is, you know, it hasn't been fun for a long time. No matter, you know, winning or not, you know, the attitude is, you know, it is what it is.
So, wondering who Morris is talking about? Maybe Tatum, who fouled out and committed several turnovers. How about Jaylen Brown, whose minutes have shriveled up? Hell, all the young guys are pouting. A year ago, Coach Brad Stevens was a savior. Now he appears incapable of pulling this mess together. Would the Celtics be better off without Irving? I think it's worth debating, but careful what you wish for here. Now that the East is loaded with contenders in Philadelphia, Toronto, and Milwaukee. Lakers boss Magic Johnson says the New Orleans Pelicans and their GM, Del Demps, acted in bad faith during their negotiations in the Anthony Davis trade that never happened. No Magic. Here's the truth. LeBron James tampered. LeBron's guy Rich Paul demanded that the Pelicans trade Davis last week, and the Pelicans did not budge, meaning LeBron and Magic and Rich Paul did not get their way. That's not bad faith. That's reasonable revenge. How about putting those efforts into teaching the Lakers how to play defense and take care of the basketball? Both weaknesses very evident in that loss to the Sixers in a game dominated in the paint by Embiid. Oh, that's right. That's Coach Luke Walton's fault. LeBron, by the way, left the court before the game was over. Another example of weak leadership. Before I get to the East teams that are serious about winning a conference title, let me say this. I am rooting for Markelle Fultz, whose fall from grace only is ridiculed by internet trolls. What happened to the overall number one pick in 2017 is tragic. Completely losing his shooting stroke in one of the great mysteries in NBA history, and hopefully a change of scenery from Philadelphia to Orlando will help him regain his skills. Otherwise, we're looking at possibly the NBA's biggest draft bust ever, and that's not a label I want to give him. In spite of Fultz's issues with the Sixers, who always will be burdened by the trade that positioned them for Fultz when they could have just drafted Tatum Gulp, Philly is gunning for an Eastern Conference title with the addition of Tobias Harris, giving them a fantastic five. That is spelled P-H, fantastic, as they're calling them in Philly. It all comes down to the chemistry lab test of Coach Brett Brown, who must do what Stevens has not done, pull together a team of monster offensive talents and delicate egos, including Joel Embiid, Ben Simmons, the tempestuous Jimmy Butler, J.J. Redick, and newcomer Harris. You saw the Sixers on display in their victory over LeBron and the Laker kids he is stuck with now. If the West looks like another Warriors romp postseason, the East playoffs will be wild. And for the next 2 months, we'll be comparing the progress of the Sixers, Bucks, and Raptors amid the woes of the Celtics. The Bucks are drama-free with Mike Budenholzer as their coach, and if you doubt the MVP candidacy of Giannis Antetokounmpo, consider how they were routed at home by Orlando Saturday when he was taking a night off to rest. Mark Gasol contributed off the bench in his Toronto debut, a victory over the tanking Knicks. Philly versus Boston would be one crazy-ass Eastern final like the old days, but right now I'm thinking Milwaukee-Toronto, which will get me a whole lot of dirty looks from TNT and ESPN. So how would you like to be a basketball fan in New Orleans, bitter because Anthony Davis is still in a Pelicans uniform after demanding his way out of town and not sure really whether to boo him or what? These are the awkward sort of situations that turn off a fan base, especially in one of the league's less stable franchises. And for that weirdness, you can blame, yep, LeBron James and boyhood pal slash agent Rich Paul, who represents LeBron and Davis and foolishly went public with a trade demand that the Pelicans rejected with vengeance. The NBA merely fined Paul $50,000. That fine should have had another zero attached to it. Maybe that would discourage agents from similar bullshit tactics. For now, Davis is a loser in no man's land, returning to uniform, yet also risking an injury that could cost him a fortune and cost the Pelicans their mammoth trade asset. And the messy Lakers, after failing in attempts to trade nearly their entire roster for Davis, are fighting for their playoff lives. Magic Johnson went to Philly. He met with the players. They must look at him as a liar. All this talk of our great young core, and then he tried to trade them all away. He told everybody what he was doing publicly. And that trade went bust. LeBron, who is 34 and dealing with a significant injury for the first time, is now hearing questions about career urgency. Naturally, he goes the smug route and says there's nothing more he needs to accomplish in basketball, even though he has a 3-6 record in the finals, might not ever win a playoff series again with this team, and continues to fail for various reasons to land a superstar sidekick. Here's LeBron.
He said there's nothing left for you to chase. Anything else from here on is kind of icing on the cake.
What was the question?
Is there more of an urgency now, as you age? Is there more of an urgency to win?
Yeah.
What do you mean by that answer?
It's kind of ironic because when I read it earlier, everyone was saying that was a response to me saying putting pressure on our front office to make decisions. So it's crazy how people can kind of, that's why I started uninterrupted, so I won't be interrupted with my quotes. I meant in the sense of, first of all, I want to win every single day, every single night. I prepare to be the best every single day. But what I'm saying, I don't have a, it's not like I wake up every single day and it's like, oh my God, if I don't win a championship, if I don't make it to the All-Star game, if I'm, you know, then my career isn't what I wanted it to be. So, you know, for me, you know, every moment I don't take for granted. And every time I get an opportunity to play the game, I play it at the highest of my ability. But I'm not in the fashion of, if I can't do this individually or if I can't do this, then, you know, my career is a failure.
Imagine if LeBron misses the playoffs for the first time since 2005 after reaching the finals the last 8 years. That would be a deep blow to his immense ego, and the ratings will suffer in the playoffs. And Laker fans will be saying, damn, in a franchise of legends, this guy is no Kobe Bryant. Remember, Kobe didn't exactly have a magnificent cast around him when he won two NBA titles without Shaquille O'Neal. The best LeBron and the kids can do is squeeze past the Clippers, depleted after that Harris deal, into the number 8 spot, where they would likely draw, yep, the Warriors in a series surrounded by monster hype. And that's where LeBron would have his season ended by the Warriors for the 4th time in 5 years. No, it's not going to end well for the self-proclaimed GOAT. Not this season and not in his LA era. Speaking of LeBron, he decided to pass on a night out in Philadelphia and jetted to Charlottesville for the Duke Virginia game with Rajon Rondo. Don't be naive here. LeBron, who somehow is allowed by the NBA to run an agency with longtime associate Rich Paul, surely was there to show his face to Duke's Zion Williamson and RJ Barrett, the presumptive top 2 picks in the next NBA draft, and to Cam Reddish, who could go 3rd or at least in the top 5. LeBron denies this, of course, just as he denies that many of his selections as an All-Star game captain, Kevin Durant, Anthony Davis, Kawhi Leonard, Klay Thompson, Kyrie Irving, soon will be free agents or available trade assets that LeBron conveniently can recruit to the Lakers after their embarrassing public failure to trade for Davis last week. Here was LeBron again in denial mode.
Well, I mean, I think that's a great conversation. I mean, everyone kind of gets up for a fantasy basketball talk, and guys that are restricted free agents, that are free agents that have, I don't know, player options and things of that nature, that's all part of the speculation that continues to drive our sport. I think that's all good and well and dandy. But for me, I picked accordingly to my draft board, and I picked accordingly to who I thought was the best available. So it just so happened that that I have, you know, KD, who's a pending free agent, and Kyrie, who's a pending free agent. James is under contract till 2030. And Kawhi's a free agent. Yeah, he's under contract. I got some guys under contract. Bradley Beal's under contract. Carl Anthony Towns under contract. Klay is a free agent. Who else is on my team?
AD.
LaMarcus is under contract. Dwayne is jobless.
But during the nationally televised draft, did you hear this? James' rival, Antetokounmpo, got in his dig on this. It was great.
With my first pick in the second round, I'm going with Anthony Davis.
You sure you want him to be your teammate?
I'm very sure of that.
Isn't that tempering?
No. Shots fired, and you're up.
Tampering rules does not imply on All-Star Weekend.
If nothing else, the Durant, Kevin Durant's harsh commentary on reckless media, has given us pause about the relationship between sports figures and reporters. As a media mogul himself, like LeBron, Durant doesn't need this daily barrage of media. He can speak directly to the fans via his social media platforms. So when he asked the Bay Area media, why do I have to talk to you? He really doesn't, as long as he doesn't mind paying league fines and dealing with harsh criticism in the Bay Area and nationally. As a columnist driving the public conversation with opinions, I have never cared if athletes dealt with me or not. I had good relationships with the likes of Michael Jordan and terrible relationships with has-beens. I just didn't care. To me, the tunnel vision had to be me and you, the reader, the viewer, the watcher of television shows. It's me and you. It's not how I'm cutting deals and getting along with people, but you know that's how the business is failing right now. I simply didn't care if athletes dealt with me or not, but it was a tough position for me, not wanting to get too close to an athlete and risking perceptions that I'm in his back pocket, or when I'm critical that I've backstabbed the guy who thought I was trying to establish a relationship with him. It's really difficult. The athletes want these relationships. The agents want the relationships. The coaches, the owners, they all want people in their pockets. We can't be. But if we're not and we're critical of them, then they think we're assholes. You can't win. And if you don't get close to athletes, they say you're aloof, as Durant said of the Athletics' Ethan Strauss during that rant. But Strauss, and here's the difference between Strauss and somebody like me, he's not a columnist. He's a basketball analyst who, like beat writers, might want to stop speculating and simply analyze while grounded in facts. Even columnists have to be grounded in facts when we're issuing opinions. You've got to leave the heavy work to the columnists. Oh, I forgot, there aren't many columnists left. This is why. Because the entire industry doesn't want columnists out there. They want to control all thought. And even Strauss, who is an excellent analyst but not a columnist, he's getting attacked by Durant. When in a few months, if Durant does go to New York, and Strauss has been speculating he's going to New York, is Durant going to say, hey, Ethan, sorry, you were right. No chance in hell. At least Durant decided to answer a few questions the other day, though he's still uncomfortable dealing with people he doesn't trust. Think about this. When Durant agrees to do an interview or a podcast with somebody, he expects accurate reporting in return. So when he reads from some of these very people that, quote, it's likely Durant is headed to the Knicks, when he, in fact, might stay with Golden State or sign with the Lakers, who really knows? He doesn't even know right now. They have no factual basis on which to write that, so that's what pisses him off, and that's why he doesn't trust them. I could not have been a beat writer. I couldn't stoop to that sort of daily deference to sports figures, and besides, I'm too opinionated, can't you tell? But leagues and teams are taking control of the media, see the Costas story, and they're dictating which kiss asses they want doing their games and covering their teams. And these emerging digital sites that could change the game, they also have to be in bed to stay in business. They've got to be in bed with the sports leagues and the teams when push comes to shove in a dispute involving a media personality. So kids, sports media might look like a fun business, and it certainly has been good to me because I have been able to control what I write and say, despite dirty attempts to quiet me, and I've made a fortune, a very nice life for myself, and have been able to see the world dozens of times over because of this profession. So many rich experiences. I've had a wonderful career. But I'll tell you what, anybody in their 20s or 30s who thinks they'll have my career, good freaking luck. Now it's time for The Buzz, our deep dive into sports and life. Chris joins the program. Chris, I know you're a Duke fan invested in the legacy of Coach K and what could be a sixth national title, but in connection with the Justin Fairfax scandal, a woman says she was raped by a Duke player in 1999, a prosperous period when Duke won a national title and finished second. How were you impacted by this allegation?
Jay, for better or for worse, the first thing that popped in my head was the Duke lacrosse scandal. And I remember the feeling when I heard that and thought, gosh, you just don't hear these things about Duke. And as a Duke fan, it obviously gave me great pause. But ultimately, we know how the Duke lacrosse scandal ended up. And after a lot of people trashed Duke and accused a lot of young men, it ended up being not what the original story was. The difference 13 years later is the world is probably much more polarized when it comes to these sort of topics. And rightfully so, and that's probably a good thing. As you often point out, somebody should be innocent until proven guilty. If Justin Fairfax is proven guilty, then he should be charged. He should be punished. But I feel given the tie-in of Duke and the climate, that a lot of people are going to rush to judgment. But maybe the Duke lacrosse scandal and what happened 13, 14 years ago will make people just hold up just a little bit and try to find out the real story. It does seem odd that 20 years have passed. Obviously, we know sometimes that's because a victim doesn't want to come forward, and that's okay. They have the right to not want to come forward, and they have the right to bring up allegations whenever they can and whenever they feel comfortable. But I just hope that everyone just takes a deep breath. And maybe I am saying that because I love Coach K and I love Duke. But we don't see stories like this every day when it pertains to Duke University and Coach K and that basketball program. So everyone just take a deep breath, please.
And Chris, as somebody in the sports media business, are you concerned this industry, as we've known it, is about to collapse amid corporate sellouts and athlete backlash? You have known and worked with Bob Costas, a legend who was pushed out by NBC because he dared to suggest football as a life and death sport. And a cowardly NBC preferred to side with its lucrative relationship with NBC. And after Kevin Durant's rip job against the media, athletes now might realize they can control social media and their own narratives, and that they no longer need these so-called mainstream media. So, Chris, I see this as something that almost becomes part of a collective bargaining agreement where players only have to deal with the league's traditional broadcast partners and can blow off everybody else, which strikes me as a fatal blow to sports media as we've known it, allowing the leagues and teams themselves to control the messages and the players to control their messages. I know, long-winded question, which is wrapped around a commentary. But Chris, how can any of us say the future isn't anything but bleak for this industry?
I think your picture is a little more bleak for sports media than maybe what will actually happen. At least I hope that, Jay. I think you're going to have players that don't want to speak, never speak. The Kevin Durants of the world that just have never embraced the media, whether network, whether bloggers, whether local, it's just never happened. And I think those guys will be allowed to no longer have to deal with the media, because really you're just running into more and more issues. Then there will be the guys that see the media as useful, that understand the purpose of it, and that will be able to speak. I think there's always going to be a point, because there's always going to be a different type of outlet or a new type of outlet that some players will embrace. Again, you see some players with podcasts like our podcast. You see some players that want to do more interviews, or now their own sort of talk shows, from what LeBron has done to what now Kevin Durant's doing. So I think that these avenues will always exist. But the days of probably a player having to sit down on a Tuesday and answer questions, I think that is probably getting a little long in the tooth for a lot of these players that just don't want to deal with it and don't want to deal with the magnitude of, if they decide that they don't want to talk, or if they say one thing, it gets blown out of proportion in the social media world. And that's really probably the biggest issue, is now there is nobody, it's not necessarily somebody reporting on it, it's somebody tweeting in it instantly with video or with audio. And maybe a player is just genuinely having a bad day, Jay.
Okay, thanks, Chris, which brings us to quickies, which are just that quick. As you know, I'm not into double standards and selective punishment. So just because Dabo Swinney is a likable, good old boy doesn't mean Clemson's national championship shouldn't have a cloud over it until a serious question is answered. Why did three players, including standout defensive tackle Dexter Lawrence, test positive for a banned performance-enhancing substance before the college football playoff? And like any other scandal, doesn't this taint the national title? Sweeney says the school's lawyers are looking into it. Yeah, our lawyers are looking into it. Fact is, according to the U.S. Doping Agency, the substance in question is not approved for human use or consumption in the United States or in other countries. So this is a very serious matter, and we should treat it that way, not dismiss it as some sort of part of the lovable world of Dabo. And the charmed life of Tony Romo continues. After becoming the hottest analyst in sports TV with his Romo Stradamus act, Is anybody surprised that Romo almost holed out a chip shot from a hospitality tent patio at Pebble Beach?
Zip it in the hole.
Oh, yeah. Nice shot.
They like it?
Yeah, what a shot.
There it is. There
Come
it
on.
Is. We could golf clap.
What a year this man's had.
Oh, wow.
For his next trick, Tony Romo will make Jeff Bezos' dick pictures appear from the National Enquirer photo trove. I don't even think Tony could pull that off.
And now a final Mariotti commentary too hot for ESPN, too smart for the internet, and too white male for Jemele Hill. Take it away, Jay.
With an eye on the burgeoning legal gambling market, the Alliance of American Football made its debut only days after the Super Bowl, the latest rogue league to fill in the football blanks during the NFL and college off-seasons. But when all reasonable people out there, including Bob Costas, agree that football safety must be addressed proactively as an existential crisis, as the NFL and college football have done, the Alliance already has turned me off by glamorizing and not penalizing a brutal, devastating helmet-to-helmet hit. Listen to how CBS announcers Spiro Datus, Trent Green, and Tiki Barber, yes, the league opener was nationally televised on the big network, excitedly called a full-on brutal raging rock shot to the chin of San Diego Fleet quarterback Mike Bercovici by an unblocked San Antonio linebacker named Sean Washington, a hit that sent Bercovici's helmet rolling on the turf of the Alamo Dome.
Picks up the first down. Bercovici never saw the man coming, and he is lit up. My goodness. Sean Washington with the stick.
This has been the issue with Bercovici. Awareness and ball security when pressure comes in the pocket. Wow, he was completely blindsided. He had no idea.
CBS is trying to sell this league, I realize, but it can't do so at the expense of obvious questions. Why was Washington not penalized and or ejected for targeting? And why did the quarterback not immediately have a concussion test in the locker room? I think Costas would be asking the same questions. The AAF is trying to be what the NFL is not, and that includes a sky judge for every game, an extra set of eyes in the press box that will correct, quote, obvious and egregious, unquote, officiating errors using real-time technology. While it's music to our ears that part of these corrections will involve pass interference calls inside of 5 minutes left in the fourth quarter, yes, see these Saints-Rams all-time bad call. That's great, guys. The sky judge also is supposed to correct errors involving player safety. But there was no correction on the Washington hit. And if the AAF wants to play this way, we'll soon be talking not about the novelty of the league, but the rash of head injuries and a sport trying to eliminate life and death doomsday. Somehow, Bercovici managed to stay in the game and was praised for his toughness by that very same announcing crew, and even by Kurt Warner at halftime. The next victim won't be so lucky. That's our show. For our producer and editor, Chris, I am Jay, reminding you to never, ever let anybody mute you in life.